This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Encouraging comments from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Within range is her quote, but Pelosi says the White House needs to put deals to bring up USMCA in the House on paper. A real deal or just a new stalling tactic? With just two legislative weeks left this year and impeachment front and center when lawmakers return after Thanksgiving, the verdict is imminent. Politically, the speaker faces USMCA opposition from organized labor, but support from businesses, including agriculture, and a strong need to show voters Democrats can still legislate.
As we've said over and over, we are legislating, we are investigating, we are litigating.
But the clock will be the final arbiter. No trade deal in recent memory has been ratified by Congress once submitted in less than 2 weeks, despite claims by some ag allies that it can still happen. American Farm Bureau Federation's trade advisor Dave Salmonson says legally allotted time frames can be compressed or overlap sessions and even impeachment.
Say the final bill was sent up and the legislative clock started, and in a scenario where maybe the House passed it but the Senate didn't get to it, well, of course, it's about legislative days. So for their Christmas break, New Year's break, the clock would stop and then would resume when they came back into session in January, if that's all the way worked out. So at a certain point, again, if all this was set in motion, the Senate would have to vote whether they were in an impeachment proceeding or not.
But the question remains, will the speaker opt for USMCA, giving the president a huge political win during impeachment, or run the clock out this year, pushing the action into an election year? Today is when, historically, the Environmental Protection Agency would release its renewable fuel standard proposal. However, thanks to other changes pending in the rule, the EPA said earlier this week that the agency would review comments and will seek to finish the rule this winter. The comment period for the proposed changes regarding small refinery exemptions closes today, which effectively puts the final rule on hold until the proposal is finalized. Corn and ethanol groups were busy earlier this week submitting comments to the EPA. Many say the proposal breaks a promise by President Trump to make up for all lost demand created by the exemptions. The industry says more than 4 billion gallons of demand for biofuel has been lost due to the retroactive small refinery exemptions for compliance years 2015 through 2018. National Corn Growers Association President Kevin Ross of Iowa states the proposed rule fails to provide the assurance needed that EPA's practices for granting waivers will continue to change going forward. Preparations are underway for the U.S. Capitol Christmas tree and the annual lighting ceremony now that it has arrived from its home forest. Rod Bain reports from the USDA in Washington.
It's an annual tradition in the nation's capital to kick off the holidays. And this Thanksgiving holiday week and weekend will be a busy one on Capitol Hill, specifically the Capitol grounds, days before Thanksgiving.
We'll hand it off to the Capitol architect staff.
That comment from Ivan Knudsen of the U.S. Forest Service from New Mexico, days prior to his and the 2019 U.S. Capitol Christmas tree's arrival in Washington, D.C.
Every year, a different region is selected to provide the U.S. Capitol Christmas tree. This year, it was the southwestern region, and the Carson National Forest stepped up to provide the tree.
As for the description of this year's iconic conifer,
it's a 60-foot blue spruce, 68 years old, and it's coming out of the Cuesta Ranger District of the Carson up by Red River, New Mexico.
Like years past, the 2019 Capitol Christmas tree began its journey after a summertime selection process.
Usually they're looking for a tree that's over 60 feet tall, and the tree that has a good crown ratio is a conical shape, and this year's tree is a good candidate tree, and it passes with flying colors in all those categories.
Once cut down and prepared for travel, it began its cross-country journey on Veterans Day, starting with a victory lap around the Land of Enchantment.
We've been to 17 communities throughout New Mexico, and the response from each community has been overwhelmingly filled with pride and just so happy that the tree was coming from New Mexico and that they were able to share this gift with the rest of the country.
The state of New Mexico is also involved in the festivities through creation of ornaments.
Throughout the past year, communities throughout New Mexico, school students, the whole state have been coming together to make ornaments. Over 11,000 ornaments have been made, 3,600 of which are going to be on the actual U.S. Capitol Christmas tree, and the rest are going on the 55 companion trees that are going to be in other congressional offices throughout Washington, D.C.
The U.S. Capitol architect and staff will spend much of their Thanksgiving week putting those ornaments and other lights and decorations on the tree, preparing it for the annual lighting ceremony.
It should be ready to be lit on December 4th.
The U.S. Capitol Christmas tree is quite a sight to see if you happen to be in the nation's capital for the holidays. You can also enjoy the magic of the Capitol Christmas tree via the magic of the Internet. www.capitalchristmastree.com has links to videos, blogs, and other resources to learn about the U.S. Capitol Christmas tree. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Moving on to State of Illinois Ag News, an Illinois Extension Ag economist recently wrote, due to lower corn and soybean yields, 2019 net farm income on Illinois grain farms are projected to decline more than $80,000 from last year levels. The Farm Doc Daily article, written by Gary Schnitke, starts by putting farm income in some historical perspective. He says since U.S. farm safety net policies were changed in the mid-1990s to allow producers to plant what they want by reacting to market signals, there have been three distinct income eras.
From 1996 to 2005, average income on Illinois farms averaged $55,000. From 2006 to 2013, when we had higher commodity prices because of ethanol growing demand and shortfall someplace else, we had $189,000 of income, much higher. And now, since 2014, we've averaged $79,000 of income.
With a lot of variability around that midpoint. This year's income, for instance, is within that range, but Schnitke adds way off from last year's net income for an Illinois grain farm.
So just to put some perspective on it, last year we had $147,000 of income, which was reasonably good for the period since 2013. MFP payments helped a lot, obviously. MFP payments helped a lot. This year we're probably looking at something below $50,000 on average for income per farm in 2019.
Lower yields are the primary cause of the lower income. Again, MFP payments help a lot.
Lower yields are the primary factor, and we would be in much worse shape without MFP payments this year. We would be negative income.
Again, Schnitke says if it were not for the Trump administration's MFP or market facilitation program payments, which have been made to farmers around the nation for lost access to the Chinese market, Illinois grain farmers would have a negative income for the 2019 growing season. In other state ag news, Bill Lee, a farmer from Minock, has been elected president of the Illinois Corn Growers Association for 2019-2020 at their reorganizational meeting, which was held Tuesday immediately following the organization's annual meeting. Lee has served on the ICGA board for 6 years, most recently as vice president. He will continue his role as District 4 Director for the duration of his term as President, serving members in Bureau, Lee, Marshall, Putnam, Stark, and Whiteside counties. Lee was also reelected to a third term serving District 4. Joining Lee in the leadership roles are Vice President Randy D. Suter of Woodhull, Treasurer Matt Rush of Fairfield, and Secretary Keith Sanders of Vandalia. The Exports Committee will be led by Chairman Mike Homerding of Plainfield and Vice Chairman Kate Danner of Aledo. Elected to lead the Industrial Committee were Marty Marr of New Berlin and Vice Chairman Terry Smith of Clayton. Grassroots Committee leadership for the coming year are Chairman Ted Moatz of Elmwood and Vice Chairman Sarah Hastings of Sydney. In addition to Lee, five other directors were reelected and will continue in their positions as directors. They are Mike Homerding for District 1, Marty Marr for District 10, and Matt Rush for District 13. Reelected at-large directors include Kate Danner of Aledo and Dave Rylander of Victoria. The newly elected director of District 7, serving DeWitt, Macon, McLean, Moultrie, Piatt, and Woodford counties, is Mike Bunzelmeyer of Maroa. Moving on to our last state ag story, members of the Grain and Feed Association of Illinois continue to talk propane shortages, and the item will likely get more attention when the group convenes for its annual convention in February.
Well, I know one of the big things will, of course, be the propane situation that they'll probably be talking about in the hallways. That certainly created lots of opportunities for how do you manage a facility when you can't get the gas to dry. I know we had some members that, they had certain facilities that were able to dry via natural gas, so they were able, they had to haul it from one facility to another. But that's, you know, all part of that is some of the business that we're in, I guess, and how we have to manage the facilities. But, you know, our convention, you know, one of the things that we have to deal with, year in and year out, of course, is, you know, the regulatory environment. One of the sessions we'll have at our convention, which is February 16, 17, and 18 here at the Crown Plaza in Springfield, is dealing with OSHA and EPA regulations. You know, the EPA is always an interesting cat, because we, you know, as people move into some rural areas, they may have not been around a grain elevator before and understand that there can be a lot of traffic coming and going at harvest time. It's really challenging to be in full compliance with Illinois EPA laws, because essentially it says you are not to allow dust to go off your property line. And you think about the traffic driving in and out, and just the, you know, the handling of grain in general, that's oftentimes difficult. And so we'll have a session on that, and combine that with OSHA, kind of talk about regulatory and what we need there.
GFAI Executive Director Jeff Adkisson says other topics include training employees and weather risk and its impact on production agriculture. The convention is February 16th through the 18th at the Crown Plaza in Springfield. Finally, moving on into local ag events around the area, don't forget that the Hillsboro FFA chapter is collecting new unwrapped toys for their toy collection for Toys for Tots. You can donate these new toys at bins at the Hillsboro High School Ag Building and in the main building hallway now through Friday, December 13th. If you have any further questions or need more information, you can call FFA advisor Noah Gallion at 618-499-8814. And that'll wrap it up for this Friday morning edition of the Ag Show. But remember, if you have ag news for us, please email it to us at WSMI@WSMIradio.com. So for this Friday morning, November 29th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.